Hi, this is James French.
This is Ted Diamond here.
And this is The Awareness Connection. This is a podcast in which we discuss the human being and our potential to become conscious in thought and action. Today we're going to talk about more about... We're really going to continue something that we were talking about last episode, where we were discussing the stages of awareness. We were going to talk more specifically about what stages of awareness we as human beings are capable of, what we're born with, and maybe offer, or you know, maybe also talk about some practical applications about what exactly it means to cultivate higher stages of awareness. So yeah, what do you think, Ted?
Yeah, I think one reason this is a useful topic to talk about is because we sometimes think of, when we speak about awareness, we think of becoming, practicing mindfulness, and that becomes sort of a monolithic practice. We're not entirely clear why we do it, and we're not entirely clear how we do it. So many people practice mindfulness meditation, which means you just pay attention in a sort of non-judgmental way to passing thoughts and feelings. But one of the questions that has to be clarified is, what does it mean to pay attention? Why do we pay attention? And how do we pay attention? So I think we should talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And that's a more kind of a practical issue, which I think we promised to speak a little bit about.
Right. Yeah. And it's fitting with within the context of a model of stages of human awareness. Like, you know, you can imagine, and I think that we'll discuss this, about different sorts of attention, or perhaps different levels of attention. Yeah, it's going to be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Where would you like to start?
Well, how about with basic attention that we are familiar with, which is selective attention. We're all, as humans, we're capable of attending voluntarily to something that we are interested in. I think that's a good starting point, because That's what we normally think of when we think of attention.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. The regular normal ability to, watch television, to pick up a pencil and write continuously. This is, these are examples of it, I'd think.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's attention, and it's very sophisticated. But usually when we attend at that level, we're pulled along by what we're attending to, so okay. that we can pay attention. We can watch something on TV, or we could read a book and be in a conversation with someone. And we might be quite attentive to what we're doing, but the situation will pull us along. If you try to attend to something when you don't have something of interest, you'll find that your attention will flag. Mm. So now what appears to be voluntary and maybe conscious attention is not as conscious as it appears.
Yeah.
So we find out if we're trying to pay attention in a situation where there's not very much inherent interest in what we're looking at or doing, then it becomes a little more difficult.
Okay. Okay.
And I think that's a good starting point there.
Yeah.
Because then we could look at what does it mean to pay attention in a more sustained way when we don't have something of much inherent interest to think about or look at. And we could talk about how to do that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And now that you mention it, it's almost like worth talking about how strange it is that our attention could flag, I'm noticing that there's a car pulling out of the driveway over there, and you know, the car is going to be gone pretty soon, but let's just say it parked there for a little while. And I just wanted to see what it looked like. But I'd lose interest rather quickly if there weren't something going on out there, someone that I knew walking around doing something interesting. I'd either get pulled along by something else, or I'd get bored, or something would come up in my mind, and then I'd just sort of forget.
Yeah.
You know? And this kind of seems to be our normal everyday experience.
Yeah. You know? Not only is it a normal everyday experience, but there are a lot of people out there who are counting on our attention being fragmented like that.
Oh, yeah.
Because they want to pull it in various directions. So
yeah, bright lights, loud flashing signs. And,
yeah. So, you know, a lot of people's attention is taken up by accidental things that are not as accidental as they appear.
Right.
And they're caught up in it. And that becomes a lot of their time. You know, there are people really addicted to, I don't know, Facebook or.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, and it's like, so those systems are designed to take advantage of our normal human attention, which tends to be drawn in by stimulus, drawn in by sound, and we tend to forget what we've chosen to pay attention to, if anything at all. So they're really designed to take advantage of something that's a normal baseline.
Yeah. Yeah. So a good practical, we could talk about just the very practical process of learning to pay attention in a more deliberate way to something you choose.
Okay.
So a real simple example of that is, you mentioned looking out the window at a car.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the window and you decide that you want to look out the window and see what's going on, and you embrace that as something that you actually, want to be doing, and choose elements of interest, like seeing what movement is happening on the street. Are there people? Are there leaves moving on the trees? And just begin to look at that as a quality that interests you. Now you're paying attention, you know, what you might describe as a more mindful way. But you're not just paying attention mindfully in a way that you might very quickly forget about, but you're doing it as a result of a decision you've made. So now you're doing it consciously and embracing it consciously, which I call that conscious attention.
Okay.
Many of us know how to do that, but or I should say, many of us do that in particular situations. For instance, if you're I don't know if you're, you know, listening to music. We know how to listen to certain aspects that interest us, or a singer, we like their voice, or maybe we're studying a particular skill and a teacher draws our attention to elements of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Here, we're doing that in a more self-guided way.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing it for no other reason than simply to pay attention to what's happening out there, and it can be very quite pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And we can become quite practiced at it, so that we can actually choose what we pay attention to rather than allowing the situation to dictate where our attention goes.
And just to be clear for viewers, you called this before, you said conscious intention.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay, which is like, yeah. This is an interesting part of this whole discussion, because there are building blocks of attention, you know, something that we talk about. Conscious intention, what you're saying is this is a choice that you make. It's self-directed, and it's about choosing, again, consciously, what you intend to do, you know, and in this case, it's to pay attention, you know, to give your attention to something over a period of time.
Yeah.
It's like a plan, you know?
Yeah. And it's not the same as meditate. It is, you could describe this as meditation. I mean, if you're sitting on a bench in the park and you just decide you're just going to watch people going by, you could call that meditation. I mean, meditative practices are often like that or involve something like that. But it's not what I'm speaking about here isn't necessarily meditative in the normal sense, because you might decide that what you want to pay attention to is the contact of your feet on the floor, or perhaps you're standing and you want to pay attention to movement of parts of the body at joints, like turning your head or something. Now it's not quite meditation. It's more like almost like an exercise where you're choosing something that you could deliberately try out in a mindful way. So it's not meditative. It's more just a kind of a thoughtful activity to think about.
Okay. Does it have to be self-directed? Like, meaning, you know, does it have to be about perceiving something in your own physical field that, you know, like your feet on the floor, for instance? Or, you know, could it be listening to a piece of music without forgetting?
Yeah,
you know, without getting distracted?
Yeah, could be that.
Okay, so it's really like a conscious plan. Like you've set yourself to do something, you know, you've guided yourself, you've made a choice, you've made a decision, and that you're going to carry something out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it could be something as simple as you're going to the bank, you're on a line, and instead of worrying about who's in front of you and how they're doing, you say, you know, I'm not going to allow my attention to be diverted by, I don't want to be dragged into worrying about, how the line is progressing or that someone's having a problem with the teller and I'm sitting here getting impatient.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as saying, no, I'm not going to think about that. I want to be aware of the room, and I'm going to stay, while I stand here, I'm going to remain alert to what's around me.
Okay.
That's a kind of conscious intention. Yeah. And it's choosing what you attend to. And that's an important thing to be able to do, because now situations that would be distracting or would pull your attention so that you're getting annoyed or worried or bothered or just distracted, now you can make a choice about what you attend to. And that's an important element in any kind of awareness or meditative practice.
So this is really a basic or like a fundamental, like a first step out or beyond our normal level of awareness.
Yeah.
This is the beginning. We're sort of recognizing, you know, we're not pathologizing, we're just recognizing that like our normal attention tends to be drawn out or drawn in, tends to be forgetful. And it's just, this is normal. And well, if we're going to go beyond this, then what does it mean really to go beyond that? Well, it's about planning. It's about carrying something out. It's about choosing what you're going to do and wanting not to forget
being intentional. Yeah.
Being intentional. Okay. Yeah. One of the fundamental building blocks of the next stage of awareness, you know?
Yeah. Before you sit down and expect yourself to be able to pay attention for a whole hour or assuming that you should be doing that, why not, you know, first begin with seeing if you could just pay attention in a constructive way to something you've chosen. Mm-hmm. That's a useful skill to have. And as opposed to a meditative practice where you typically will separate yourself from normal activity, this practice you could do anywhere.
Yeah.
Probably anywhere. You could be in a bus and sitting on a bus and say, you know, I'm going to just enjoy looking out at the street and seeing what's going on out there. Or or listening to someone speak. You could say, you know, while I'm listening to someone speak or watching a movie or something, I'm going to be aware of my feet on the floor, my back against the chair, so that I'm aware of myself while I'm listening, and now you're mindful in a way because you're listening, but you're not forgetting yourself and getting totally wrapped up in what you're listening to. So you're learning to become mindful in some way in daily activity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is so important. I mean, and this is really, you know, you said before about how we often approach, like, say, for instance, a mindfulness practice with the hope that, like, sitting for 10 minutes or listening to your breath for 20 minutes is going to carry over. You know, I think that this is often what we understand or hope or are being sold is going to happen when we quote unquote practice mindfulness. It's going to carry over. But what you've just talked about, this, you know, what you've called conscious intention, this is a different thing. Like this is actually something that you can carry through. This is conscious intention. This is directly impacting how you can live your life. And it seems like people who become very successful in, say, an instrument or other kind of like skilled abilities, mm-hmm. I think sometimes have a sense that this type of thing is important. You know?
Yeah.
I think that this is an important component of sort of higher learning, you know? And I really appreciate that you're breaking this down.
Yeah. No, I like that idea. Yeah. I think you're right. I think people who are accomplished are pretty focused and pretty clear about what they care about, and they're not easily distracted.
And yeah.
I've always wondered about that because I notice that that people who are accomplished, or sometimes just people who are quite professional in what they do, mm-hmm. they have certain elements of this ability are quite developed in them. They don't.
Yeah.
To them, it's part of their professional work, so you don't think of it as something related, let's say, to being mindful. But they're pretty clear. Like we're having a discussion. Let's not get personal. Let's not discuss politics. We have a topic we're covering. We're staying with it.
Yeah.
You know, I like that. And
yeah, this is a thing that I've, you know, that I've learned with you, for instance, having meetings, you know, this is about, you know, having a meeting where there's a clear agenda that's being set out at the very beginning mm-hmm. so that you know whether you're sort of getting pulled in this or that direction. You know, you have a clear agenda. Everybody knows what's to be discussed.
Yeah.
And it doesn't just begin. It doesn't just start. So yeah. We have clear things, you know, like everybody's going to be heard, but we have this meeting time. It doesn't last forever. So we want to know exactly where we're going to go. I think that's...
Yeah. Important.
That's an ability that a good leader would have, you know?
Yeah.
And again, you know, you might not notice it. It just seems like they're pretty organized or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that ability, that quality of knowing that you have something to get done, and then you're focused on it and purposeful, that's important. And then if you need a break, then you take a break and you chat and you can have a moment to think about other things and not be serious. But that's a clear process. Whereas if you're really not sure about what the meeting is for and you're really not sure why you're there, then you're kind of, you might just be wasting time.
Yeah. You know, you run into frustration and all that. Well, then I don't know where you want to go next, Ted, but it seems to me like the next thing is, well, okay, I'm going, you know, I've like planned on, say, looking out the window for a little while and seeing movement. But I always get distracted, you know?
Yeah.
And I find this exercise to be frustrating because I always get distracted. I can't seem to maintain my attention. You know, like, what do I do? You know?
Yeah. So you're shifting to the problem of not losing attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that like a good next step?
Yeah. It's fine. A little bit different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we could cover that too.
Okay.
I'm just thinking about whether there's more to say about conscious intention. You know, there's.
Okay, yeah.
Or.
Yeah.
So, well, let's stay on conscious intention. I have one,
sure.
one more.
Yeah.
Just share this.
Yep.
It's kind of related to the new topic you've raised. So let's say you're paying attention to something that you've chosen to. You're looking out you've gone to the park. You're sitting on a bench. You want to pay attention to what's around you. You're looking at the trees, and then you find that you. You know, you question why you're doing it. You question whether you're doing it. Well, one element, again, that isn't typically spoken of when we think about meditation, that I think goes along with the decision to do something, is the ability to speak nicely to yourself about what you're doing. In the same way that a teacher would speak to you and say, how are you doing with that? Try that out. Are you doing well? Okay, now try this or good job. Let's try a little more. In the same way that a teacher would encourage you, you have to speak to yourself that way. I say that because we typically don't speak so nicely to ourselves.
Right.
And we have to learn to do that as part of guiding our process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's counter to what we hear about in meditation, where you're not supposed to talk to yourself or think more or make judgments. But before we get to the point of being able to not think about things and not be involved in thinking, we have to become give ourselves some guidance. And I think that's an important component, because then you say, look, I'm doing good here. That's all I want. All I wanted to do is just look around, enjoy what I'm seeing, take note of my surroundings. That's good. And then you say, that was a good job. Let me stop for a minute. And let me think about the next step, and then try again. And then you're now, kind of in a process, a positive process, where you're embracing what you're doing and being honest about embrace. Maybe you find it boring and you say, this is a little boring. It's okay. Let me think about that. But I think that's part of it as well. Part of learning to take it easy with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So you give yourself victories, you know, you keep your morale high. You know?
Yeah. And be positive, have a positive attitude.
Positive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also, you know, it's also like, I could see how that also maintains your clarity of purpose. You know, I've done what I set out to do. You know,
yeah.
I've actually done what I set out to do. You know, I've looked out the window and I've chosen this. You know, it might not last a long time, but. Oh, okay. You know, I'm clear about, I was clear about what I set out to do. I did it. Okay, good. Let's take a break.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now your other question about being distracted, a little bit different, but not totally different, because if you find that when you're paying attention to something, let's say a couple of minutes later, you realize that you've been lost in thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it was worrying you, just took over, and you think, wow, I was trying to pay attention and I wasn't. I might not, fight with that and try just being consciously, intentionally aware a little bit and just give myself time to do that so that I'm not being too, strict about the process.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing you could do is just pay attention and then notice when you lose attention and make that your goal. You're not trying to keep your attention, because you can't really keep your attention. You certainly can't practice being attentive. That being attentive to something happens in the moment. So trying to be attentive is going to kind of interfere with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spontaneity about attention. I mean, being consciously aware of something or mindfully aware. There's a spontaneity that can't be forced. So you're just noticing, and that's fine. And then your job now is not to try to keep it or hold on to it or force it, but simply to notice when it goes away. And if it does, bring your attention back.
All right.
And that's all you do.
Yeah.
That's the beginning step.
Okay.
You might find that it goes away and you have to bring it back over and over because that's what it's doing. You're distracted or you're upset or something. And that's the first step to becoming more steady in your focus.
Yeah. Okay. So the first step is the first step in becoming steady is, you know, after you've set out with your plan, you know, with your conscious intention, you know, like after you've embarked,
we don't even need to think of conscious intention in a way. Right now, we could just say, I'm just going to look at something and just play around with what.
Just going to look at it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So the, you know, you're not in, instead of maintaining your attention, which I guess is like an incorrect application of effort. Because like you said, like, I mean, attention is a spontaneous thing. It's like a perceptual thing. You know, it's a body level thing, probably.
It's sort of in the moment.
It is to notice when you have become distracted. And yeah, I feel like there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a lot in there. And I mean, I would like to dwell on this for a little bit because I know listening, I know for myself, this was a big, this was a big problem when I was learning this material or, you know, before I encountered your views on this and also hearing a lot of students express the same frustration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, simply that, oh my God, you know, I got distracted. And I've heard people also almost like object. So wait, are you saying that distraction is a good thing? Like, so I'm supposed to get distracted and then notice it? Almost like that, you know, it like doesn't make sense to some people. It seems almost like a subtle point. Which is, I don't know, maybe why it's worth dwelling on this, you know, for like a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you think of when people practice being mindful,
mm-hmm.
they often just say, well, I'm there for 20 minutes or an hour, whatever it is, and I'm just going to, you know, observe passing thoughts and feelings non-judgmentally, which is, you know, the typical sort of definition of being mindful, and they just sit there quietly, and you wonder what they're doing. They sort of might space out, they might get relaxed, they might feel that the sort of their sense of time or space is altered in some way. But you don't really know exactly what the purpose is. Is there some specific skill you're learning? Is there a particular competency or attainment? And I would say that there is, if you really want to practice being mindful, you have to think about what your purpose is. And it's not clear enough just to say, well, I'll just be here for 30 minutes and sort of hope for the best.
Yeah.
And I also in the other extreme, if you say, well, I'm really going to be determined to keep my focus the whole time and I'm going to keep my attention. I don't know what that means. That's just too, you know, trying to just keep your attention completely fixated on something usually means that you'll end up in a pretty trance-like kind of state.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something much more immediate and simple that could be looked at, which is, can you pay attention in a mindful or conscious way and then enjoy that and then see where you get distracted. And then say, okay, I'm going to get back to that.
Mm. Okay.
And if you do that, let's say several days in a row, you'll find that you'll get better at noticing when you've lost attention to the point that you'll notice that you're about to lose attention before you do lose attention.
Mm-hmm.
So now your attention doesn't go away as fast because you've caught it. You've guarded against that. So now you're able to stay with the thing you're looking at a little more steadily until you get so good at it that your attention doesn't waver and you stay alert and aware of what you're looking at for, let's say, 5 minutes straight.
Okay.
And that's a real skill. You've learned something. You haven't learned attention, you know, in the sense that you've practiced being attentive. That happens in the moment. But you've learned about inattention and learned how to steady your attention. That's a particular kind of competency.
Okay. Well, and so what you're, the competency then is, in part, it's about like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a reminder to your future self, like a proscriptive memory, or a, you know, it's like the same thing you do when you tie a knot around your finger.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah.
You know, like, what's this knot? Oh yeah, I was supposed to do whatever. And so when you're, the process of noticing that you're distracted means that you're distracted and you might be lost. You know, you might be in a trance-like state. You might be just lost in thought. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute. I was supposed to be doing something. Oh yeah, that's right. I got lost in thought. So it's almost like this reminder that your past self has given you, you know, like, snap out of it, you know, something like this, you know, it's like a, you know, like wake up out of the dream. You know, you have to notice that you are distracted, you know? So that's its own, you know, like that's its own skill. That's its own thing. And then you're saying that goes even further, where you begin to recognize, I don't know, the fork in the road or something, you know, you begin to recognize, oh, this would lead me to distraction. Or maybe it's a, I don't know, you know, it's a thought bubble or.
Yeah. I don't know if you notice it in the sense that you think about it and say, oh, that's what that is. Cause that's introspecting. You know, I'm not sure I describe it as some recognition of what it is. Cause now it's almost like that becomes like therapy. Like, oh, I know what the things are that get me distracted.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying that you could see your attention wavering, you know, as it happens and bring it back. So it comes back.
Yeah. Okay.
Until you could see it wavering before you've lost it.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like a confidence because now you know you're just steady and you're not going to be pulled away. And that becomes, and you, when that happens, you've achieved a level of conscious attention that is now clearly beyond what most people, the selective attention that we spoke about at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly a higher level of attention than our normal selective attention that is constantly being pulled and fragmented. Now we're able to attend at will to something without being pulled in any way.
All right. Okay. And
we've now talked about conscious intention and we've talked about undistracted attention, conscious intention and undistracted attention. And that's a lot.
That is a lot.
So in the upcoming book, I mean, I've devoted two whole sections and really a third just to those, that process. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
Yeah. But both of those things can be learned relatively quickly. I mean, it doesn't take 5 years to learn that. It could be learned in a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
At least in some basic way.
You know, the fact that, you know, this is, again, so often I hear, and so often I've felt on my own, that somehow distraction is something to feel bad about. When what you're saying is like, you know, normal voluntary attention is a distractible attention. This is sort of what we've been given by nature, you know? And it's really, you know, if you want to learn how to get to non-distracted attention, you're just going to have to own up to the fact or just accept the fact that distraction is going to come in almost like spontaneously. And it's nothing to feel bad about. You know, it's just like, I just noticed that I got distracted.
Well, of course.
I got distracted, you know?
Yeah, no, of course it's going to happen because it's part of our normal consciousness. Now, when you say it's also not something to feel bad about, I mean, there is, I would say that the word distracted can mean two things that could mean kind of normal distraction, like our attention is pulled by something. It could also mean that we're in a disturbed or upset state.
Okay.
And a lot of people, when they talk about meditating, they talk about emotions, troubling issues that are troubling them, personal issues, upsetting events that are happening in their lives as being the main impediment.
Right.
I think that's a confusion. That's not the main impediment to meditation. That's an impediment to being balanced that we have to look at. You might need to talk to someone about that.
Yeah.
It's if you always frame the problem of being attentive as, well, I'm upset today, so I wasn't able to keep my attention, then what you're saying is that if it weren't for the fact that I'm upset, I'd be able to keep my attention and you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, that's such a great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Emotion is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different problem. And if you were unstressed, you know, if you were unburdened, if you were physically healthy and mentally undisturbed, you would still have to face distraction.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same. In the same way, in, you know, the study of kinesthetic awareness, you know, there's always the problem of misdirected activities. You know, misdirected activities aren't caused by trauma. It's, you know, it's not the same thing as trauma. It's not the same thing as muscle soreness. Even if you were totally fine, totally healthy and everything, you would still have to face the problem of misdirected activities.
Habitual misdirected activity. And in a weird way, you could say that the normal everyday distraction is deeper than the emotional issues, which on the surface can certainly emotionally are deeper, but they're not a deeper issue. If you always frame mindfulness practice or being undistracted or being more steady in your attention in terms of the emotional issues that are keeping you from being able to be more, you know, kind of balanced or relaxed, et cetera, then now you have trivialized meditative practice, because now you're saying it's just a way of feeling better about your emotional issues. And it's not a way of feeling better about emotional issues. Feeling better about emotional issues is what you do to feel better about emotional issues.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's easy to confuse the issues. And I would say to a large extent, a lot of mindfulness, sort of the kind of popular mindfulness practices have been stolen by, been taken over as a way of addressing people's emotional issues and stress. And that's not really fundamentally what they're about.
Yeah. Even if they're beneficial, you know?
Yeah. And they might be beneficial. And that's great.
Yeah.
But if you then say that's what mindfulness is for, you haven't understood what mindfulness is for. That's
might
be using it for that purpose, fine, but it's not. There's more to it than that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah. That's an important point. That's a fine point, because I've heard you make this point before, and people sometimes get defensive about this, where they're like, but it does help with my stress, and it does help with my, perhaps my traumatic memories or something like this. And you're saying, well, yeah, even so, even if you get all that stuff taken care of, you've still got the problem to face. You've still got your normal level of attention that you want to transcend.
Right. You know? And we still have the larger subject to look at, which shouldn't be reduced to people's emotional issues.
Yeah.
Larger subject to be articulated. So I have no problem if someone says, I have to look at my emotional issues. Fine. I mean, when I first did kind of deeper level of meditation, kind of going beyond where we've spoken about today.
Sure.
Emotional issues came up for me, which I had to deal with.
Yeah.
But I dealt with them kind of separately. I've kind of compartmentalized them, looked at it, took a hard look at it, spent some time on it, and then went back to meditating. I didn't say, oh, well, the meditation is about figuring out why I had some issues with my parents or something.
Yeah.
The meditative problem is its own problem that has to be looked at. And I And the reason I'm so emphatic about it is because if we don't look at it as its own problems, then how can we frame the higher possibilities available to the human being?
Right. Right.
If we always bring it down to the therapeutic sphere where we're saying, well, we're helping people with their emotional or stress.
Yeah. Problems. Yeah.
And I'm interested in the deeper, higher level issue because I don't believe it's been framed very carefully and I don't think it's been placed in an educational context that does it justice.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you conflate the two, not only do you lose out on that higher potential, but as a teacher and as an educator, you risk like malpractice, where you're recommending, mindfulness for someone who really needs like a trauma therapy, and you're really not, you risk malpractice, but you also risk like charlatanism. Where you're telling someone who really needs like some serious help on something that they can just, get through it with this mental practice.
Yeah. And then sometimes teachers will think that they feel good about themselves because they see this deeper issue and they feel like, they start to flatter themselves that they can help the person with the deeper issue. It very well may be none of your business.
Yeah.
Because it may be something you're really not qualified to address. And I would very readily admit that in my own teaching practice to say, that's not something. I'll support the person, try to point them in the right direction, help them, but I wouldn't presume that I can help, that I'm qualified to help them with those emotional issues because that's not what I'm trained in. I'm not competent.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to know that. It's important to know what you know. It's important to know what you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And yeah, which is why become conflated. Those issues easily become.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that this has been a really clear conversation. It's helped me to get clearer on the distinction between the two.
Yeah.
Ted, maybe before we go, non-distracted attention. This is clearly, I think it's a convincing argument that this is a different form of attention. You could say a higher form of attention than our normal voluntary attention. Because it builds on certain capacities from voluntary attention. It addresses some issues with voluntary attention and some spontaneous distractions or whatever it is, they dissipate, they go away. So clearly this is, it's a good argument to say that this is a higher form. Maybe a more complex form or something like this. What else can you say about that as a higher stage of awareness?
But that stage?
Yeah. Is that the same thing as you can use the word like mental quiescence, or is it the same as what would you have to say about it? Are there like more distinctions to be made?
I have to think about it. It's not the same as, it's not the same as meditative practice that goes toward insight into yourself. That's kind of a further development. We're not speaking about that.
Okay.
So in a certain way, it's very simple. It's not deep in the sense that it's trying to look at the nature of the self or the, it is related to mental quiescence because to the extent that your attention is totally steady, you'll tend to be quieting the mind. And conversely, if the mind becomes very quiet, which sometimes can happen spontaneously, your attention will tend to be very focused. So those two things are very related.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably more to say about it. And of course, I've written about it. I think the ability to focus attention means that you'll have the ability not to be distracted and to focus your attention much more at will when you want to. You won't be very easily distracted. You'll be able to keep your attention steadier. You'll be able to use your time in situations where it would be lost and you'd be squandering time. You'd be able to use your time more efficiently. There's probably more to say about it, but I think that's just an important quality, important element being able to attend in that way.
Yeah.
It also implies that you'll be more, you can't really easily achieve undistracted attention if you're emotionally disturbed or upset.
Sure.
So it gives you a kind of a basis for noticing that, and you'll become more discerning about the situations you'll allow yourself to be in that will be distracting.
I see. Yeah.
So, I will avoid conflict if at all possible, because it's a waste of my time. I don't want to be having an argument. I don't want to be involved in an argument or something. So I tend to be much pickier about what I do and what I use my time for.
It's like similarly, if someone knows that they don't like how they behave when they've had too much to drink, I just won't do it. I just don't like how I act. I don't like how I feel the day after. And it's similar but at a more refined level. Prefer non-distracted attention to be working well.
Yeah.
And I know that if I get into disturbing situations, it's going to be more difficult. And, if I'm, like you said, if I'm yelling on the phone, if I allow myself to do that, then, I'm really going to have a tough time for the next couple of days.
Yeah.
And it's just, let me be pickier about the sort of energy that I give. Let me be pickier about what sort of interactions I have. It's really like a, it allows for like a more refined hygiene kind of,
I like that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, we live in the real world, so it's not always possible, to avoid these situations. But I mean, at least, you're picking up skills and can probably strengthen them over time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. But so it's, I like that we covered those two topics. It wasn't too much. What is our next topic, James? Was that going to be on sensory motor awareness? Did you mention?
Yeah, the next topic was going to be on sensory motor awareness, like more or less the most recent book, which is The Curriculum.
Curriculum on
kinesthetic awareness.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's our topic for the next podcast. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly touches on this, and there's so much overlap here. This is a more general discussion today, even though there were a lot of practical elements, but it's really part of the larger stage model. Sensory motor awareness is going to be more, it's the educational component of kinesthetic awareness.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, good.
Yeah. I look forward to it. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Please like and subscribe. You can find us on YouTube. Please like, and you can find the podcast on your preferred podcast platform. And please give us a rating. It really helps. So until next time, thanks, Ted.
Thank you. Thanks, James.